Welcome to Small Time Leaders, a 10-minute podcast about how giving credit to others can help you experience more success and meaning in your leadership and life. My name is Michael Allen Tate, but my friends call me Mike. I work with accomplished business people who want to design a personal strategy to make their next big move their best move. In each of my podcasts, you will hear a successful leader talk about a couple of people in their lives who did or said a small thing that was so on point and profound that it still impacts how they live and work today, which I've come to call small-time leader moments.
I am so pleased to introduce you to a longtime friend of mine, Jay Gill. Jay is a successful business executive, and he's probably the most politically connected person I've ever met. When you go to lunch with Jay anywhere east of the Mississippi, just add an hour for him to be stopped by 10 to 15 of his best friends who just happened to be in that same restaurant that day. As a bit of background on Jay, Jay began his career at Synovus Bank. After 10 years of growth there, while he was only in his mid-30s, Jay made a risky move. He left Synovus for the opportunity to become the president of River City Bank, a private startup enterprise that he and his team founded in 2007 in Carrollton, Georgia. After several years of leading the bank to be profitable and set up for future success, Jay left River City to reach to a more public-facing position. Today, he is vice president of economic development and community communications for a leading utility company headquartered in Carrollton. Jay is a great guy. He's a family man, an okay golfer. He loves smoking barbecue, making more friends, and serving his community. Well, Jay, it's good to have you back. Really enjoyed learning about Bobby Bowden and Jimmy and your dad on Tuesday. So tell us about another small-time leader in your life that made a difference in who you are today.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, glad to be back. We all try to think about the coaches that we had through school and people that had direct influence on us as young people, or maybe it was a certain employer, boss in the workforce at some point early in our career. I played a lot of sports growing up, football, baseball, basketball, soccer, tennis in high school. One of the things a lot of people didn't realize is that I debated for 3 years out of the four in high school as well. And my debate coach was Richard Bracknell. And Richard Bracknell in debate circles is legendary. There's a lot of people in Birmingham who still know Richard. He was very involved with camps and things that were done over at Samford University. In fact, that's where I started my college career, was over at Samford in Birmingham. Richard was a little bit smaller in stature. He was kind of a quiet, soft-spoken. He had a sharp tongue, but he was quiet and methodical about it. But he was also my soccer coach, and which was really hilarious because this was, of course, 35-plus years ago. He could stand on the sidelines and smoke a cigarette, telling us to run faster, doing wind sprints, as manly as he could do it. And we actually had a pretty good soccer team. We had a bunch of guys that had moved there from other places from around the country. And my junior and senior year, we had a pretty outstanding team. But he was my debate coach. And Carrollton High School has a very successful debate program and has had since he's been there, you know, almost 40 years now. I think he's one of those that retired and came back 49% to keep coaching. And the funny thing that I try to explain to people about Richard, Mr. Bracknell, or Brack, as everybody calls students call him, you know, he's soft-spoken, he's quiet, he relates to his students with their problems and struggles. And so the guy's loaded with empathy and love for kids. But when you look at the fundamentals of the debate program, he wasn't that hands-on coach that was running drills and trying to work certain pieces of debate over and over. And back then, we did policy-style debate, so it was timed affirmative and negative speeches and cross-examination, speed reading, the flowing, and very much a game as much as it was an actual intellectual process. And it was a lot of fun. In the summers, we would get our topic, we'd go off to camps, and then come back and prepare all the briefs and have material ready for the season, which would last, you know, throughout a good bit of school year. My sister was a debater. She always went to camp up in Michigan, and I always went to a camp at Dartmouth up in New Hampshire. It was a great experience for me. It gave me a chance to see the country. I debated in New York and Chicago and Nashville, Wake Forest, Emory, Samford, all over. It was just a good experience. Really took me outside of my little bubble world I lived in. But what was so funny was Richard's debate teams have had 40 years of state titles and going to national competitions and were so successful because he created a program where the upperclassmen debaters would literally train and teach the lowerclassmen, the freshmen and sophomores. And he had a system in place where he was there to support. He was the moral driver, but the kids were teaching the kids. And when I look back on that and kind of relate it to my professional life now, or even with my kids, I'm thinking, you know, about the succession planning that we do at work and trying to train next generation workforce or the work we're doing with chambers of commerce and the community. You know, it's about passing along those skill sets. It's about bridging those gaps. It's about being prepared for crisis, for pandemics. I tell some of the folks that work with me, I'm like, you know, when I get hit by a bus tomorrow, y'all got to be able to step in and run this part of the company. And so if I'm not doing my job preparing them to be as good or better than I am, then I'm failing myself. I'm failing my company. I'm failing them. And so I think that was kind of a key lesson I learned in that program under Richard Bracknell, was how to be selfless and prepare others to take over for me later. Don't be threatened by trying to make someone better than you. You know, you see those parents sometimes, Mike, and especially like football dads and baseball dads that, you know, push their kids really hard, but deep down, they don't want them to be better than they were. You know, but dad was always the greatest. And we all know that that's just not healthy. We should always want our kids to be better, smarter, stronger, safer, you know, just better people than we are. If we're not trying to push them to do that, then we're failing them. Same type of lesson. We can do it at home, at work, at church. And Richard Bracknell certainly does it in the debate team and school systems.
Yeah.
It's raising that next generation.
Sounds like besides smoking on the sidelines, which is a great story, kind of classic of that generation anyway. So Richard's kind of modeled. He was more kind of a model than that guy that has all these quotes you remember and sayings that he did and those kind of things. But it's more about where he stood and how he stood and how he held himself and how he developed others. I know you coach your kids now, too. And of course, you're a coach at work. Anything in particular, you mentioned in general kind of that idea of promoting and helping people get ready for the next step. Anything that you do, if you think about it, kind of picked up from Richard or Brack, as you called him, that you apply today with your folks, your kids or your people at work?
I think about at the office, you know, when senior staff discussions going on, obviously, barring anything that might be confidential, particularly with the communications team and a couple of these young folks we have in our area, you know, I try to bring them in and not only explain what decisions are being made, but why. And then if it relates to our budget, if it relates to some of our goals and action plans that we have created in their department, then I challenge them to build that solution themselves first. I'm not going to just hand them what I think the marching order should be. I want them to be a part of the building process. Way off track, or maybe I'll see some potholes that we've hit before, I can bring it to their attention and try to explain why we might not want to go down that road. But just trying to engage them and involve them in the decisions I make every day, or copy, even as simple as copying them on email responses with other departments, that if it affects their area, I want them to be in the know. Tell my communications team and key accounts folks all the time, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, you guys have got to step in and take over this part of the company. And then what we talked about in our last call, you know, both of us have battled heart disease and gone through major events with heart procedures. You know, that puts into real life, it may not be a bus that gets me. It may be fried chicken. And I need to make sure that something could happen tomorrow, pandemic, whatever it is, this team needs to be ready to step in. And they're young. I've got some younger millennials, and I've got a couple of Gen Zers in here that think differently than my bosses did. And maybe a little bit, I'm a Gen Xer. So I'm one of those weirdos in the middle, hopefully can bridge the gaps. But I know that they have to be prepared. And if I'm trying to just do everything myself, if I'm micromanaging, if I'm ignoring what's coming in behind me, and if I'm not preparing them to be better than me, then I'm doing this company and them a disservice. They need to be better than I ever was. And then hopefully they'll do the same for the next generation behind them.
Sounds like he's a guy that kind of loved people and got them where they were and then got out of their way. You know, we talk a lot about engagement, employee engagement. That's kind of the key to retention and all that in companies. And sound like you, oh, that's what it really was. He had you guys so engaged that you were able to grow and you're doing the same thing with your people. And appreciate you sharing that. I know it'll be a lesson everyone can take with them as they go throughout their day. As we wrap it up here, Jay, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, could you let us know how? And I'll, of course, have this on the show notes, but not to say anything about that. If they'd like to get in touch with you, how they'd do that.
I work at Carroll ENC. You know, we're a regional power cooperative in Western Georgia, right here on the border between Georgia and Alabama. You can come through our website at cenc.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn, and we'll put the link out on the podcast. But I'm James A. Gill, Jr., James Gill in Carrollton, Georgia. So I'd be glad to answer any questions or share what little insights I might have and based on my journey in this round rock. I've been very blessed. I've been submerged around a lot of interesting people in my life, particularly in the business world. And I try to be a good listener. I feel like that's the only thing I've done really well in life is listen to other people's experiences and avoid my own potholes. Now I've hit plenty, and Mike, you know some of them, and we've been friends for over a decade now. And of course, I love your writing, and I like the fable, the moral compass that you set in your style of writing. I love it, and I've shared your material all over Western Georgia. Yeah, I love sharing with others and learning from their experiences too. And it helps me grow and it helps me avoid hurdles in the road. It helps me be a better parent, you know, a better man and a better business person as well.
You're also a good speaker and storyteller. So somebody needs someone to come call Jay and make the crowd go with him. So Jay, thanks so much again. Appreciate you being on the podcast. Have a good one.
My pleasure, Mike. I appreciate you doing it.
Thank you so much for listening. I like to leave you with a thought. I believe that we live in a small world that often feels out of control. But I also believe there is a big God who is in control and who speaks to us in a still, small voice. And if we just listen, we may be granted the occasion to make a positive difference in someone's life. So I challenge you to be a small-time leader today and help someone see themselves in a brand new way. Thanks again for listening to this podcast. For more information about my firm, blog, products, today's special guest, please go to michaelallentate.com or smalltimeleaders.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the Small Time Leader podcast so you never miss an episode. And join our Facebook group for more exclusive content. I'll see you on the next episode of Small Time Leaders.